Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Stu does America.
Follow the show on YouTube, would you? Go there. Click subscribe. Do all the things. We appreciate it when you do that. I mean, there's got to be, you know, there's got to be you. You know, I'm talking to you today. You're sitting there, you're like, you know, I've been hearing him say that at the beginning of every show for how long, and I've never actually bothered to go click subscribe. Just do it. I will stop bothering you if you do it. I promise. You might hear me saying it over and over again still, but I promise it won't be directed to you. Jason Buttrell is here with the latest on Pete Hegseth and the Venezuela situation. We're going to talk about your package and whether or not you're paying more to mail it. I will say, the second I sent that story this morning, I want to talk about this today. Our producer's first move, write a package joke. That's how this show works. But we're going to start by doing the corruption of Tim Walz. And unfortunately, I don't have like 3 hours right now to get into everything that Tim Walz is involved in. But man, it is exciting, an exciting world. I will tell you, we did a previous show on this. It was episode 1153. Stu does the Great Minnesota Tax Scam, where we went over a lot of the details here. So I'm not going to rehash everything, but we'll get into some of it. A lot of it was based on the reporting of Chris Rufo, who, of course, hosts a show right here on Blaze TV that you should check out. It's called Rufo and Lomez. Just started. So I think they've done maybe 3 or 4 episodes, but it's part of your Blaze TV subscription. You can go to StuDoesAmerica.com and get access to the entire network, and we would love it if you did so. What's interesting here is you had, there's been some reporting on this over time. What Chris Rufo and his co-author wound up kind of uncovering more than anything else to add to this, because they added a lot of depth, but also talking about how some of this money looks like it went to Al-Shabaab, the terrorist organization. That was a major development. But there's been some reporting on this over the years. We're now getting to the point where the New York Times is even reporting on this, how fraud swamped Minnesota's social services system on Tim Walz's watch. This is fascinating. Why would they be doing this? Why would they be doing this? Why would Tim Walz be the target of an actual investigation by the New York Times? Well, let me give you some of the details. Over the past 5 years, law enforcement officials say fraud took root in pockets of Minnesota's Somali diaspora as scores of individuals made small fortunes by setting up companies that billed state agencies for millions of dollars worth of social services that were never provided. These are the types of things that we always tell you are going to happen when they set these programs up. They always do happen, and no one cares next time we say it. That is the way this works. Round and round we go. Federal prosecutors say that 59 people have been convicted in those schemes so far, and that more than $1 billion in taxpayer money has been stolen in 3 plots that they are investigating. That's more than Minnesota spends annually to run its Department of Corrections. To stand all the prisons, more than that, stolen by one basic community. Kind of an issue. Critics of the Walz administration say that the fraud persisted partly because state officials were fearful of alienating the Somali community in Minnesota. Governor Walz, who has instituted new fraud prevention safeguards, sure he has, defended his administration's actions. How shocking is that, though? Again, we're on the merry-go-round. How many times have we said this? When you take a group and you are terrified of saying anything bad about them because you judge them by the color of their skin, you judge them by the gender that they might have, or the sexual preference that they might have, or the country of origin that their ancestors might come from. When you do that, because we're saying we don't want to do that, you're saying you do. When you do that, of course this stuff is going to happen. You're going to be terrified of these groups because you're protecting them. You're telling them all the time that no one is allowed to say anything bad about them. So when it comes time to say, hey, you guys seem to be stealing a lot of money from us, you're afraid to say it. So it goes on and on and on and on, and more millions of dollars go out the door. The episode has raised broader questions for some residents about the sustainability of Minnesota's Scandinavian-modeled system of robust safety net programs bankrolled by high taxes. That system helped create an environment that drew immigrants to the state over many decades, including tens of thousands of Somali refugees after their country descended into civil war in the 1990s. Fascinating, right? It's weird when you just give away a bunch of free money. A lot of people who want free money show up. That happens all the time. It's what we say about the border. It's what we say about all sorts of different communities that are able to access this cash. Of course, you go where the cash is. right? That's what people do. These are the incentives of the market in a weird way. But the market is, of course, turned upside down when you're just giving the money away that belongs to other people that you've taken from them through some legal process. Mr. Walz, Minnesota's second term governor, who has gained national attention last year as Kamala Harris chose him inexplicably, that's my word, as his running mate in a White House bid, said this week that claims of racism did not hinder his administration's response to fraud. No. They were just totally incompetent. Had nothing to do with racism. Had nothing to do with them wanting to avoid the Somali community over the fact that, you know, they might get criticized for it. No. They just were pathetic in every way. That's his defense. Mr. Walz has said that his administration may have erred on the side of generosity during the pandemic. Yeah, that's it. That's like when you ask someone, what's your biggest flaw? They're like, I'm just too generous. That's me. And then they say the state pushed out large sums of money. Of course, we know that. Mr. Walz, who is seeking a third term next year, he should not, has created a new task force to pursue fraud cases. A task force always solves every problem. It made it easier for state agencies to share information with one another and announce plans for new technology. An announcement of plans. Everything always works well when you announce plans. Don't announce that you've done anything. Just announce that you have plans to do something, including artificial intelligence tools. Just throw AI into any announcement, and everyone loves it, to spot suspicious billing practices. The message here in Minnesota, Mr. Walz said, is if you commit a crime, commit a fraud against public dollars, you're going to go to prison. Yeah, that's not the message at all. It's the exact opposite. The whole story is about how when you commit fraud, you don't go to prison. Now they're starting to go to prison years and years and years later. I guess he's clear of that campaign and can admit this stuff. Recent months, Walz's administration began shutting down the housing program altogether, acknowledging that it was riddled with fraud. Last month, the state hired an independent auditor to review claims of 14 other Medicaid-funded programs that the state said were at high risk of fraud. Okay, so you have that going on. Then you have the fact that this was not new at all. This was known at the time. All this fraud was going on, and people were telling Tim Walz about it the entire time. Did he do anything? No, he sat there and just gave away billions of your dollars if you're a Minnesota taxpayer for no reason. Minnesota DHS workers accused Governor Walz of ignoring fraud warnings. Let me give you part of this. I'm not going to be able to go through all of it because it's very, very long and detailed, but it's important. This comes from the Minnesota Staff Fraud Reporting Commentary, Minnesota DHS, which is a commentary account, as they point out. Tim Walz is 100% responsible for massive fraud in Minnesota. We let Tim Walz know of fraud early on, hoping for a partnership in stopping fraud. But no, we got the opposite response. Tim Walz systematically retaliated against whistleblowers using monitoring, threats, repression, and did his best to discredit fraud reports. Instead of partnership, we got the full weight of retaliation by Tim Walz, certain DFL members, and indifferent mainstream media. It's scary, isolating, and left us wondering who we can turn to. In addition to retaliating against whistleblowers, Tim Walz disempowered the Office of Legislative Auditor, allowing agencies to disregard their audit findings and guidance. Media and politicians supporting Tim Walz or the DFL agenda attacked whistleblowers who were trying to raise red flags on fraudulent activities. Cascade of systemic failures leading up to Tim Walz. Agency leaders are appointed by Walz willfully disregarded rules and laws to keep fraud reports quiet. As staff, we firsthand witnessed and observed fraud happening, yet we were shut down and reassigned and told to keep quiet. It's a structure created and maintained by Tim Walz, who has created an environment of interrelated agencies and institutions, including the media, that help foster fraud. Fundamentally, I hate Tim Walz so much that I have to read you a lot of this. Fundamentally, Tim Walz is dishonest, lacks ethics and integrity, check, 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 poor leadership abilities, check, and has never taken any accountability for his role in fraud, check, I would add, or anything else. Instead, Tim Walz deflects by blaming national politics for his own failings. As such, we can't fight fraud in Minnesota alone while we're trying to appeal to federal levels of government. We are grateful to numerous solid politicians and media outlets who are trying to halt fraud. We are also grateful to other whistleblowers. So that's what they heard. He heard in advance while this was all going on. He just ignored it. Because he's dopey Tim Walz. He was worried about fake football coaching at the time. Here is his dopey response. This is on Meet the Press this weekend.
Do you take responsibility for failing to stop this fraud in your state? Well, certainly, I take responsibility for putting people in jail. Governors don't get to just talk theoretically. We have to solve problems. And I will note, it's not just Somalis. Minnesota is a generous state. Minnesota is a prosperous state, a well-run state. We're AAA bond rated, but that attracts criminals. Those people are going to jail. We're doing everything we can. But to demonize an entire community on the actions of a few, it's lazy. And as you heard Senator Kelly say, this president has cut a lot of inspector generals. He's cut programs that could help us tackle this on. So we'll take it on. We'll put folks in jail. I don't care what your nationality is. I don't care what your religion is, your color. If you're committing crimes, these are programs that were meant to serve students with autism, to housing and to making sure people had enough to eat. There's a reason Minnesota ranks as the top, lowest childhood poverty, best place for children to live. People are taking advantage of that. They're going to prison. That is totally disconnected with demonizing an entire group of people who came here fleeing civil war and created a vibrant community that makes Minnesota and this country better. Oh, but that's Donald Trump. Deflect, demonize, come up with no solutions. Yep. He's not going to help fix anything on fraud.
Yeah, we know. My God, there's a big difference between fraud and corruption. By the way, this is a guy who said in that commentary, I think, the fact that it was a well-run state makes it attract criminals. Pretty sure that's not true. He did say also that it was AAA bond rated. So maybe the criminals are just like, hey, we got to find a AAA bond rated state. It's really important to us. Yeah, White House has responded. Yes, there's something wrong with walls, and it costs taxpayers $1 billion. Dozens of individuals, largely of East African descent, looted taxpayers out of over $1 billion intended for child food assistance and what amounted to country's largest pandemic relief fraud scheme. The Trump administration is terminating temporary protected status for Somalis indefinitely, halting migration from third world countries, reexamining green cards for every alien from every country of concern, pausing asylum decisions and more, all as a part of this relentless effort to ensure migrants that remain are a net positive for our society. Of course, that should be the goal of every migrant. You're going to let people come into the country. They should be helping you along. I'm sure that you know someone who migrated to this country who you find to be a positive influence on it. I know many. There's lots of them here. It does not mean that everybody who came here is a bad person or is hurting our country. It does not mean that every person who came here, even from Somalia, is doing damage to our country. Sure, there are many wonderful examples that escaped a civil war and have done great things. That being said, a lot of these people are not the examples of that situation. And we need to do something about that, not ignore it because we feel bad to call people names because we're worried they might think we're racists. That's how your country falls apart. And of course, when you think of country falling apart, you think of Tim Walz. By the way, it wasn't just Tim Walz, we should note. Keith Ellison also has an interesting connection to this. Feeding Our Future, Keith Ellison caught on tape. Keith Ellison, Minnesota's attorney general, can clearly be heard pledging his support to individuals who would soon become his family's campaign donors and later Feeding Our Future criminal defendants. His recorded statements flatly contradict his contemporaneous public statements and raise uncomfortable questions about the intersection between political fundraising and constituent services. So what's being done about all of this? Because there's a lot. Treasury is investigating whether Minnesota welfare money went to Al-Shabaab, the terror group, according to Scott Besson. He said, at my direction, U.S. Treasury is investigating allegations that under feckless mismanagement of the Biden administration and Governor Tim Walz, hardworking Minnesota's tax dollars may have been diverted to a terrorist organization, Al-Shabaab. That's just one part of this. Federal funding in Minnesota is at risk after review finds issues with commercial driver's licenses. In another scandal, Sean Duffy says it keeps getting worse for Governor Tim Walz. Just one day after 400 brave employees from Minnesota DHS exposed massive fraud, USDOT has discovered that one-third of non-domiciled CDLs were issued illegally in the state. Minnesota, you're on notice. You have 30 days to fix this or lose $30 million in federal funding. We also have this. Claire Lancaster, a spokesperson for Minnesota Tim Walz, said we take safety on our roads seriously, and the Minnesota Department of Public Safety has already worked to ensure they are in compliance with federal laws. It's interesting. Every one of these things we find out, they say, well, we've already fixed that one. Sure, it went on for a really long time and we did nothing. But now you can trust us because, you know, our governor is that idiot that you keep seeing on television, one of the worst vice presidential picks in the nation's history. You should trust him because he's trustworthy. Sure. By the way, latest development, this broke maybe 10 or 15 minutes before we started taping. Feds plan operation in Minnesota focusing on Somali immigrants, according to the Associated Press. So President Trump has taken this really seriously, and that is great. The government seems to be working in that direction. And look, again, people who didn't do anything wrong shouldn't be targeted because they came here from Somalia if they came here legally. If they came here illegally, they should be targeted and they should be exported, deported out of this nation as soon as possible. Anyone involved in the scam should go to prison for a long time. Whether that will happen or not in Minnesota is a question, and that's why the feds have to get involved. Jim Garrity writes this for The Washington Post. Tim Walz is crumbling along with his 2028 hopes. I guess my question would be, he has them? He has hope? Really? Like, are we talking about the presidential election or just the fact that 2028 occurs? Like, he's hopeful that 2028 occurs as a year. I don't know. If he's thinking about the presidency, he should stop thinking about it. Past year has not been kind to Walz. Kamala Harris's recent book, 107 Days, makes clear she was thoroughly disappointed by Walz's performance as a running mate. She describes watching him in the vice presidential debate on TV and saying, "You're not there to make friends with the guy who is attacking your running mate." This is, of course, a small part of the problem with Tim Walz. The fact that he was actually a little nice during the debate really has nothing to do with his performance. And by the way, she stated at the beginning, the reason she picked him is she was overtired. Well, I was really overtired that day. That was her excuse as to why she picked Tim Walz. Walz's approval rating in Minnesota, the governor, is evenly split. But keep in mind, it's a heavily Democratic state. The gubernatorial primary is until June. If you're a Minnesota Democrat, do you really want to roll the dice on a not-so-popular guy going for a rarely pursued third term? Republicans are likely to nominate Lisa DeMuth, the state's House Speaker, who's already hitting Walz because he let fraud run wild. If Walz is sweating re-election in what is traditionally one of the safest states for Democrats, maybe it's time to conclude that he was a lousy pick as Harris's running mate and doesn't merit serious consideration by Democrats for the 2028 presidential nomination. I mean, in typical Jim Garrity, understated form because they definitely should not be considering him in any way. And remember, we started this headline, this whole thing with how fraud swamped Minnesota's social services on Tim Walz's watch. One thing that's interesting about that headline, that's the New York Times headline, is I think it's the New York Times saying, let's get this out there so people know and don't consider Tim Walz as an option. Now, I don't think you really need to do that before the primary. I think even Democratic voters have to be smarter than that. They can't possibly think, hey, we should go back to that well. You know, the guy who absolutely sucked in the last campaign. It's not impossible that they would think of something like that, but I don't think anybody, I don't think there's any love for Tim Walz. You know, when you lose a race, sometimes people say, gosh, if only he won. If only she won, right? That happens sometimes. There's a bit of that with Kamala Harris, not a lot. There's none of it with Tim Walz. There's none of it with Hillary Clinton. Neither one of those they want to look back to at all. Kamala Harris, I think, like, they don't like, but they don't necessarily blame her as much as I think even Tim Walz. I think Walz is a guy who was, that role was really seen as something that could have either been a complete Hail Mary, right? You throw the ball up in the end zone, hope your team comes down with it, even though you're not necessarily expecting to win. I don't think they were expecting necessarily to win with Kamala Harris at the beginning. But I think, you know, if they had picked somebody else, maybe they would have had a chance or a better chance. Secondarily, I think that was looking to launch someone out of that slot. You know, Josh Shapiro being the more obvious candidate, they didn't go that direction, and now they have nobody. Now they're kind of like, Gavin Newsom, maybe? Like, I mean, and if that's, I mean, he's by far leading the pack for 2028 candidates. If that's the person you're looking to and you're thinking this is a good option, you're obviously horrifically desperate, right? Or you are married to Gavin Newsom's best friend and you're thinking about hooking up with him because that's what he does with his best friend's wives. That's a totally different story, not one we're talking about right now. All right, Jason Buttrell's here. Maybe he'll have commentary on Gavin Newsom's propensity to sleep with his best friend's wife. We'll come back with that next. America. You know, there's a point in which good enough just doesn't cut it anymore, especially when it comes to performance and confidence. And that's why Blue Chew created Blue Chew Gold. It's a major upgrade designed to support both the physical side and the mental side of readiness. It's a new 4-in-1 formula, combines everything you need for performance and confidence. And in other words, it's not just about function anymore. It's about feeling fully engaged and present. Blue Chew's tablet dissolves under your tongue and can begin working in as less than 15 minutes, which means less waiting around, less, of all of that, but more self-assurance and more certainty when the moment is right. And the whole system is built to be simple, no awkward appointments, no hassle, just a discreet subscription that arrives right at your door. Blue Chew Gold is essentially the next era of performance, something that is designed for men who want smarter, more modern approaches that help support both mind and body. And there's a special deal going on right now. You get 10% off your first month of Blue Chew Gold with the code STU. Blue Chew Gold, the code is STU. Head to bluechew.com. Details and safety info are there as well. It's bluechew.com. The code is STU.
Ah, da ist meine Prime-Bestellung.
Was? Jetzt schon?
Nur eine Sache begeistert so wie die schnelle Lieferung mit Prime. Und zwar das tolle Unterhaltungsangebot von Prime.
Was schauen wir uns an?
Fallout ist zurück mit Staffel 2. Unsere Lieblingshelden kämpfen sich durch die brutale und bizarre Einöde, um dahin zu gelangen, wo alles begann. New Vegas.
Schnelle, kostenlose Lieferung, geniale Unterhaltung und mehr gibt's bei Prime. Für nur 8,99 € pro Monat. Werde jetzt Prime-Mitglied. Die Inhalte können Werbung enthalten. Fortlaufende Mitgliedschaft. Mehr auf amazon.de/prime.
Welcome back. I want to talk to Jason Buttrell, head writer and researcher for Glenn Beck. Jason, of course, you have military experience. You know all this stuff better than I do when it comes to this Hegseth situation and the Venezuelan boats. This is a very strange situation, and I have feelings kind of all over the board on it, to be honest with you. I want to start, though, with the way the media has brought it to us, which was first from the Washington Post and then from the New York Times. And we have a bunch of different headlines. Let me go through these real quick and then get your first reaction on all of this. White House, this is The Hill. They say White House confirms Hegseth authorized September 2nd strikes on drug boat. And then we also have White House says Admiral ordered follow-up strike on alleged drug boat, insists attack was lawful. So you had these two kind of competing headlines. Then you had the original, which was from the Washington Post, that said this. From the Washington Post. Hegseth order on first boat strike. Officials say, quote, kill them all.
That's okay. A little different.
That's different.
It's oddly specific, too.
Yeah. Then the New York Times comes out in what I kind of took initially as a debunking, which said Hegseth ordered lethal attack, but not killing of survivors. And if you don't know the story, basically they hit that first boat. There were reportedly two survivors that got through the first attack, and then the initial report seemingly killed them all was Hegseth saying, I don't care, they're hanging onto the boat, go kill them. This would be a violation, arguably, of the rules of war. On the other side, New York Times says Hegseth ordered the lethal attack, but not the killing of survivors. Now, I went back and looked at the Washington Post. This is a lot of setup to get to a first question, but I want to think this is important context. Went back to the initial report from the Washington Post. I'm going to read a little bit from it. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth gave a spoken directive, according to two people with direct knowledge of the operation. The order was to kill everybody, one of them said. Okay, that is consistent with their headline, but does not say there was a secondary follow-up attack where Hegseth said, go kill them all, right? It's the first attack they're saying, kill them all, okay? Missile came off the Trinidad coast. For minutes, commanders watched the boat to see if anything had happened. The special operations commander overseeing the September 2nd attack, the opening salvo in this war on drug traffickers, ordered a second strike to comply with Hegseth's instructions. So that reading of that, which strikes me as different than the controversy, is Hegseth saying, kill everybody in the boat. They try that. A couple people survive. Then the commander says, well, his initial order was kill everybody on the boat, so we should go back in and finish the job. That's not Hegseth giving a separate order to kill the survivors, if I'm understanding all that right. So first of all, if that is all true, is that a violation of the rules of war? If you go and target a boat, a couple people are survived, they're hanging on like, you know, Titanic, and they're like trying to survive there, is it appropriate for them to go back in and kill them, or is that some big violation?
Well, I can't think of a time, I don't know, and I don't think that, let me say what I don't know about. I, I don't know, and I don't think the media knows exactly what the order was. So I'd like to know exactly what the order was, because I kind of highly doubt the order was kill everybody in the boat.
Right.
I think that it would have been more like a usual military target package, which would say destroy target A or destroy target 001. If target 001 is not destroyed, you follow up and hit it again, so 001 is destroyed. That is my assumption, not knowing all the details, and none of them sounds like they know all the details because it's so contradictory.
And it's not, they're not quoting the order. It's important to understand there. They are quoting officials who say what the order was. Some unnamed officials saying, they said kill everybody on the boat. But if they just said destroy the boat, obviously that would mean everyone in the boat is going to probably die.
That's more in line with Hegseth saying destroy target 001. Then he steps out of it. Then it's the military. The admiral that says fire, they fire the missile, whatever they use to deploy it. It does not fully destroy the target. You follow it up until the mission's completed to destroy the target. It's never destroy Bob, Harry, James, and Larry.
Right.
that's not how it works. It's destroy the target. My assumption is follow up to destroy the target.
Now, the exception to that would be, like, if, for example, if you were targeting Osama bin Laden's compound, and there was a guy there that matched
a kill.
Right, a specific thing during a declared war of some type, right? Like, that is different than what we have here. And I think this is the problem legally when it comes down to all this. I don't think anybody has any sympathy for a bunch of drug dealers that are trying to hurt our people and kill them with fentanyl or whatever. I would like more evidence, frankly, that this is accurate. I'm worried about our intelligence, as I think we all should be after previous issues with it. But, like, let's just assume, for the sake of our argument, these people are drug dealers. That is different than enemy combatants. There's, isn't it? Like, I mean, why can we just assume they're enemy combatants, even though they don't seem to be necessarily operationally trying to invade us from a government source?
Well, the designation is a key point in the legality of all of this. So they have designated them foreign terror transnational organizations. That basically says they are enemy combatants on the battlefield. So they can do these strikes with that designation. But I keep going back to, I wish the administration would be way more upfront with the complete picture of what's going on here. So I've heard a lot of people talking, calling them narco-terrorists.
Yes.
Well, that's a very specific thing because there is terrorism that's going on, state-sponsored terrorists that are allowed to be in Venezuela. This is in congressional testimony. You can even see maps that show where the Hezbollah heads are people directly linked to the IRGC from Iran are in Venezuela and are running terror camps. And we know through this nicknamed cartel of the Suns, which the cartel stands for the sun designation on the general's lapels, or I'm sorry, shoulders, that they are all involved in either just allowing this to happen or giving, in some instances, direct orders and getting payments through the narcotics trafficking that's going on. But we also know that a lot of this money is going towards benefiting this terror operation as well through their relationship with Iran. So in a sense, they are narco-terrorists because they're all involved in what's going on. Just let us know that, give the full ins and outs. Let's not let it not just be a mention in a congressional testimony, which it was. This came out in 2011 in Congress. They revealed that Hugo Chavez at the time was the leader, invited in top leaders from Hezbollah, Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, all these groups. And then that's when they started running this terror island off the coast of Venezuela.
And that's still ongoing, even from the Chavez days?
I don't think it's ended. I will have to caveat that with saying I haven't seen updated intelligence or reporting on it because no one's even talked about it. So if it's gone, that's news to me. It could be. But I would like to know about I would like for the government to put a Glenn Beck chalkboard up in the Situation Room and say, look, this is what's going on with some of this. This is why when we say narco-terrorists, this is what we're talking about. But then go into the entire proxy war that's going on with this. Go into the Russia the Russia connection, the Chinese connection, the Iranian connection. All of them are vying for what's happening in Venezuela. Everybody wants to be able to be a part of this, 20% of the world's oil reserves that are there. I don't think that we're I don't think we care about the oil reserves. We're fine where we are. I don't think we want our enemies in control of 20% of the world's oil reserves. Mm-hmm. It's a big part of this entire picture.
Because the pitch has not been about that at all. It's been about drugs.
No.
Basically, like, hey.
Because of historical precedent, in my opinion.
Okay. Because I wonder, too, what you just described, and I don't mean this in a negative way to your theory here, which I think is valid, but it sounds similar to the types of things we heard before we went into, like, in Iraq.
Sure.
Right? When we talked about head of the snake in Iran. Mm-hmm. Those are real things. I mean, Saddam Hussein was really bad. He was trying to develop weapons of mass destruction. It was not far, nearly as far along that road as we thought at the time. But I still would have loved to had them. You have Iran, who really was involved in a lot of that stuff, and that's been ongoing all this time. But, you know, Trump was pretty early against that war. We, I think, at this point are very skeptical as a nation as to whether, like, hey, this is happening here, and this is affecting this, and this is affecting this, and this global thing, like, maybe we need it to be more simple. Maybe we just need, hey, these drugs are coming to our shores. We need to stop them. Is that possibly why they're arguing this and not necessarily presenting the full case?
Possibly. But I think that it would behoove them to really show how what they're fighting is a direct threat to the homeland. Mm-hmm. Not just through drugs, even though that is a threat to the homeland, but also the terror angle. That's a direct threat to the homeland. I think really they need to go into, and look, I'm not for regime change either. Although I think that's the way where this is driving. I'm not for that. I'm definitely not for American boots on the ground. That should not happen. Yeah. I don't want these things to happen. Let's just say, and I'm kind of jumping ahead of myself, the regime change did happen. Let's say Maduro's gone. What's going to happen with his army? Most of them, remember the cartel of the Suns, they've been getting kickbacks from this.
Right.
They're loyal to him because they're getting filthy rich off of it. Where do they go? Do you dissolve the military? Well, we saw what happened with that in Iraq. All hell broke loose and it became a terror haven. It's still a dumpster fire over there. Yeah. This never works out. But I don't know what the alternative is. I'm stumped too. I don't know what you have to do something. I don't know what it is. It can't continue the way it's going right now.
So would you say, when you say you're against regime change, because I would say I am against regime change as we kind of colloquially talk about it, right? Where like it's like, oh, we're going to be the ones doing it.
Forced.
Yeah. Right. Like, is it something, because I wouldn't mind Maduro going away, certainly. Yeah. I, you know, the question is really how much is our involvement there? I don't want our troops going there and doing it.
Yeah.
You know, Trump in his first administration really did attempt, I mean, John Bolton, who was there at the time, in his book, talked about it basically as a coup. Like they were trying to do it. They just recognized the opposite government and tried to push it out. Didn't wind up working. Yeah. Trump obviously is on board with this at some level.
Yeah. Well, I think that the way it definitely can't be forced in that sense. I think it can be forced and just, I think, diplomatically. And yeah. what's crazy is I think that Maduro's actually talking about this. We've been getting reports now for, a month that there's been these back channel negotiations of Maduro getting exile somewhere, but he wanted to remain, you know, retain control of his military or something like that. So Trump administration said, no, screw that. You can't do that. They could just come back and reestablish control or nothing changes. They wanted to go. There's already been an election. A regime supposedly did win that election. So there's a regime in wait to take over if everything happened, you know, cordially. I don't know how that would happen. That would be the best case scenario if something like that would happen. And there's so many ways this could go awry and not go well. But you can see the precedent that they're trying to push Maduro back against the wall. And I think they're using the Panama-Noriega historical precedent to do that. And if you look at it, it's almost shocking how similar it is. Mm. There's a few differences, but they're shockingly similar. We had a, you know, U.S. indictment for Noriega. It was for narcotics trafficking. Same thing we have against Maduro right now. Mm. The only thing that's different is the foreign terrorist organization, that kind of thing. Right. But we had a huge military buildup. We told him to leave. There was another elected regime that Noriega nullified and said he was going to retain power. We're saying the same thing that happened in Venezuela. We massed troops back in, 89? We're massing troops now. There was one incident that kicked it off and finally gave us the go-ahead to move in, and that was one of these, you know, paramilitary groups shot and killed a U.S. Marine. then we said, okay, enough is enough, and we invaded. So we're setting the tables basically mirrored off of each other, that one mistake, if you even blink at any of our military that we have massed out there, which we basically dared them back then to do it, we're daring you, then we will go in. Mm. So now the precedent is there. He was deposed, the regime flipped. We're showing them, hey, we can do this. We've done it before. What do you think?
It sounds to me that you think Trump might actually go in.
I don't think he'll go in.
No.
I think that is the dare. Look, we know the Trump doctrine at this point. Mm-hmm. Trump does not want to put boots on the ground.
Right.
He hates it. Doesn't want to do that. But his doctrine is to make it look like he will. We saw this in North Korea during his first term. We saw it in the Middle East. He would move multiple aircraft carriers in, make it look like he would sound crazy. He would be, very, very loud and make fun of the other leader.
Yes.
And eventually they would either give in, or if they didn't, Trump would back off and then take the trade route. So I think that's ultimately his final play. I think that he's hoping that the Trump doctrine pressure campaign will eventually say, you know what, guys, this is Maduro speaking, I'm done. I'm going to go live in Moscow. I've got my gazillions that I've stolen from my country. You guys are good. You know, this leader that was elected that I nullified.
Good luck, everybody.
Good luck. Yeah, we're done. This was fun. Mm-hmm. I think that's what Trump is hoping for.
Gosh, this is a very complicated picture.
Totally. Yeah.
It's very difficult to balance, which is why I think Trump doesn't want to get in the middle of it if he can help it. But feels like that we need to. We also should just quickly point out the latest reporting on the Hegseth situation is they're saying that he did not. They made their latest kind of thing they're saying is they didn't know there were survivors there, and they just decided they were going to try to blow up the boat. So we will see if that holds. It was interesting. I noticed after several incidents after this happened, there was another attack on a boat where people did survive, and they went with helicopters and rescued them. So there did seem to be at some point potentially a change in policy here. Maybe they realized they were walking too close to this line. So there may have been a change in the ongoing months.
Well, I will say it's very easy to get those records. If they saw all of that would have been discussed over the airwaves, it's all recorded. They would be able to know that immediately. So I would think that if there's any truth to this, we would already know. Like either the Trump administration would say, look, fine, this is what they said. Or, we should know very easily. The fact that hasn't been brought up, to me, screams political op. That's what it says to me.
Very interesting. All right, Jason Buttrell, head writer and researcher for Glenn Beck. Jason, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Lust auf besonders feine Weihnachten? Erlebe einzigartigen Genuss mit Rewe Feine Welt. Diese Woche zum Beispiel Rewe Feine Welt Schweizer Käse Trüffeltraum mildwürzig, je 150 Gramm Packung nur 3,49 Euro. Oder Rewe Feine Welt italienischer Prosciutto Crudo, roher Schinken mit Meersalz behandelt, mindestens 18 Monate gereift, je 100 Gramm Packung nur 4,29 Euro. Festlich sparen mit Genuss. Rewe, dein Markt.
I think I've mentioned this once or twice, but I don't know if this has happened to you. You get a package, it comes to your house, and you go to sign for it. And when you're signing for it, the UPS guy's like, okay, and that'll be an extra $147. And you're like, wait, what? No, I bought something online for $50. What do you mean it's $147 extra dollars? This is the tariff thing in action. And what's going on is these companies are now kind of like, well, we don't want to pay all that up front. And we don't want to necessarily communicate that to the people, because if you do, they won't pay it, right? You're not going to buy the same item that you wanted to pay $50 for. You don't want to pay $200. So they're just sending you the item for $50. And then when you get there with like a COD, basically, of $100-something, people really don't like that. It's happened to us multiple times at our house. There's a news story in the New York Times about it now. A surprise when your package arrives, you have to pay the tariff. The end of tariff exemption on goods worth $800 or less lets U.S. shoppers with an extra shipping bill that must be paid before delivery. They give some examples in here. One, $456. They were told they would have to pay over $250 in customs duties. Another one in here was even more than that. It was more than the actual package. And it's kind of because we just have been refusing them. I don't want this. We're not going to pay this extra cost. I don't know how that's going across the country. Some people they're saying are paying it. And this goes back to the de minimis exemption. There was this thing where if it's less than $800, there's no tariffs involved, even if we have a tariff policy with that country. Now, China was definitely taking advantage of this. So Trump is trying to get rid of it. But now it's causing other problems. This stuff does happen. Costco sues the Trump administration now, seeking a refund of tariffs. And this is a big development because it was interesting to see if you'd have a company wanting to stand up and be the face of this. Because to me, there's no question that it is not legal and constitutional that the way they got a lot of these tariffs put in through IEEPA. We've discussed it many, many times here. I won't bore you with all the details again. But the Trump administration, I don't think went through the correct process to implement these tariffs. I think the Supreme Court is going to say, no, you're not allowed to do this. We've had surprises before. Maybe they create some new rule, a new power out of whole cloth. Maybe they'll do an Obamacare redux. But I don't think he's going to win that case. The second part of that, though, is, well, if those tariffs were not legal, don't we get our money back? That's what Costco's arguing. And that will be a fascinating one because it's a lot of money. I mean, you're talking hundreds of billions of dollars. Imagine having to refund all of that to the people who paid it. They deserve their money back, though, if the tariffs were illegal. I don't know if that will happen. We will see. A couple other things on the climate change front. Zillow is removing climate change scores from their home listings. This is always a scam in my mind because it was basically this idea. OK, it's kind of you're kind of greenwashing your business and everyone's like, oh, I feel so good. I'm green. We'll just say what the climate risk is. That way people will think about the climate more. I don't think anyone paid attention to them, but I will say, it was one of those things where it could hurt the value of your home. If you have a high climate risk, someone looks at that and says, well, I mean, I don't want to get flooded or I don't want to, deal with any climate related stuff. So I'm not going to buy that house. Could hurt the value. There's been a lot of disagreement, some lawsuits and such discussed, at least on that front. But Zillow is just removing them, getting out in front of all of that. And finally, you didn't hear a lot about climate change this summer. Why? Well, no hurricanes made landfall in the U.S. in 2025. ABC News says, why? Why is that? And of course, it has to be the reason, of course, climate change. climate change is the reason. Actually, they're saying, just basically luck. We lucked out. Sometimes you can just luck your way out of a crisis like a climate apocalypse. You just sort of close your eyes and cross your fingers and hope for the best. And sometimes no mean storms that want to go after your SUV will even come on shore. And actually, we've had a real reduction in the amount of storms that have come across shore, especially serious ones over the years. There's been a couple, but really since, Katrina, the number has been much, much lower. And luckily, we've been on the right side of that for a while. Of course, no one really notices that or bothers to tell you about it. But that has been the truth for quite a while now, and luckily continuing through 2025. All right, back in a second. Jace Medical makes preparedness simple, practical, and even empowering because they give you the control in all sorts of situations where people feel helpless. The Jace case is a perfect example of this. It's a ready-to-go kit of emergency medications and antibiotics. They've expanded that idea now with different emergency medication cases for different needs. They're all designed with real doctors at the head of it and making sure that this is all wrapped up nicely for you. Jace Daily is a full 12-month supply of your essential daily prescriptions. Think about that. If you're taking medicine every day, you have some disruption in the supply chain. What do you do? What if you can't get those prescriptions? You need them every single day. Well, they can do that. They also have Jace Aid first aid kits, which go for everyday care all the way up to serious trauma. And now you start to realize how much of your life you've been leaving to chance because you don't have all this stuff yet. Well, you can get it easily with Jace. They even offer ivermectin in multiple formats, so you always have what you need and what you need on hand. Right now, they've got a deal going on because they want to make sure that you're prepared going into the holidays. They got Jace gift cards, which is a good gift for anyone who wants to be prepared. They got 20% off of those for a limited time. It means business owners can even pick up the Jace mini first aid kit and meaningful holiday gifts for their teams as well. Go to jace.com, enter the promo code STU at checkout, and get a discount on your order right now. The promo code is STU at jace.com, jase.com. Okay, so here's what happened. Begun the Japanese bear wars have. We've talked about this before. There's a big bear war going on in Japan. Bears are attacking people. People are fighting back, hunting them. This is an ongoing thing. And when you, of course, have a situation like this, you know capitalism will step in and provide all the solutions that you need, including, yes, bear attack shelters going on sale in Japan as country experiences record high number of incidents. What do you got with a bear? Well, it looks like kind of like a container, a little dumpster out in your front lawn. Looks beautiful. That's the outside of it. And then inside, I mean, want to talk about a glorious thing. You get for months and months and months, you could just keep away from how many bears are they expecting to attack? And you might say, this is kind of a ridiculous thing, right? Like someone just trying to profit off of a couple of bear attacks and they're trying to sell these shelters. And I would necessarily usually agree with you on that. However, man mauled by bear in Japan while using a public toilet, which is probably not even the top bad thing that can happen to you in a public toilet. But I will say, this segment sponsored by Bear Shelters.